Ken Booty as our next speaker, and we'll have a 5 minute break, just a 5 minute break after his presentation. So I don't think Dr. Ken Booty requires an introduction. So.
That's
good.
Okay. Thank you, George. I have a whole list of authors, and I should apologize to one or two of them where I may misrepresent things, because more of this is something that I've done on my own since then. Crop models vary considerably in their methods for predicting dry matter growth and transpiration. But within a given model platform, say DSAT or CropSys, they use the same methods for ET. Now, the problem, I'll show an example of maize models varying considerably in predicted ET, discuss a little bit about overview of ET equations, particularly trying out the transpiration efficiency approach in the DSAT and ag maize models, and illustrate that in a against data sets and sometimes data free, and also come up with an argument for a new AgMIP team called Crop Model ET Team to test models against ET soil water data and water limited growth. Now, I hope you can see all these multiple lines. This is the result of the AgMIP maize sensitivity to CO2, to temperature, and other variables. And this shows from -3 to +9°C. Temperature is not the point I'm making. I'm saying at four different sites, sentinel sites, the models had as much as twofold variation in ET given exactly the same inputs, soil characteristics, and management. So the question is which model is correct? Are any of them correct? And to go forward from that case to say what's the source of the variation. Now, I'm not going to do that here, but I would argue that this is a problem to worry about with these crop models. What's the ET method that's causing this? Partitioning the E versus T, soil water supplied and rooting allowed, or a transpiration efficiency approach used. So the argument here is that you should test against data. Now, this looks simple. This is to say systems approach water balance. You have water inputs, infiltration, and you have water loss to transpiration and E and percolation. You have soil layers, but the devil is in the details. A lot of equations in the different places. And my next slide is the one that I call kind of the punchline, because this one says, how can the models go wrong? Or maybe more likely, they compensate. You may get the right yield prediction at the end of the season because you've adjusted things together to work. Okay? So first, starting off with energy balance equations and maybe the net radiation equations as well. Or an extinction coefficient, and these are dynamic models, so they use LAI and then have an extinction coefficient to partition to E versus T. You should really be using the one for total energy, not the PAR coefficient. Soil water holding capacity. This is parameterized differently. Probably even more important is where you allow the roots to be in that soil for extraction. Or you have different methods for root water uptake. In the DSAT, we have a Cowan type water uptake based per unit length of root. The APSIM models use a KL, which is a fraction uptake allowed per layer, which may vary with depth and it's crop specific. You have equations for runoff and infiltration. Curve number is what's used right now in these, and it doesn't handle residue effects, crop cover, cracking clay. We had a great example of montmorillonite soil in Ames, Iowa, where, yeah, there was no runoff, but the model predicted it because the water ran down the clay cracks. Another problem would be insufficient upward flux from a saturated soil layer. Some models do that well, some do not. Or the soil E method, soil water evaporation. It's not evaporating the soil here, by the way. And transpiration efficiency equations. Now, I won't emphasize this too much. You have this whole pattern up here, which is water demand from weather, ET equations, light interception, extinction coefficient. So you have potential transpiration. The complement should be potential sol E. And then you ask the question of whether that's supplied. So you have a water holding capacity. You have a rooting profile, or where you allow water extraction to be, and you take up water per unit root length, or with this KL function versus depth. Now, this is what I'll be illustrating here. It's not so much a testing of models so much as illustrating one particular example, and did this with two different models, both in the DSAT. Whoops, went backwards. Okay. Hopefully, oh, wow. Okay. Okay. That's what you get with this touchy-feely approach. AgMaze in the DSAT platform is a model that Tyce Tolenauer, Sarath Kumandini, and a whole maize model improvement team has been working with. And it can use FAO 56 or Priestley-Taylor, but they configured this to use a transpiration efficiency approach. Calculate above-ground crop growth rate, subtracting, first of all, leaf-to-canopy assimilation, subtract maintenance respiration, do growth conversion efficiencies, and then the potential transpiration following mostly the APTIM approach. You have crop growth rate divided by transpiration efficiency, and TE varies with VPD. I'll show you the function later. I did the same thing in the CSM crop grow model. There's a little difference here in that I wasn't able to separate just above ground versus below ground, so we're going to overpredict crop growth rate and have a little too much predicted T, and I'll show you what that means, modifying the efficiency. And there's a C3 efficiency, or I'm going to skip this slide. Now, this derives from this Tanner and Sinclair hypothesis, okay, and that is that biomass is some function of transpiration and a transpiration efficiency. Okay. Now, Cropsis, and this is where Claudio is probably looking back at this, he predicts transpiration first and then goes through conversion VPD effects to give him predicted biomass. EPSIM predicts biomass first and then uses this VPD approach to predict transpiration, which to me is very intriguing. And the theory is that, yes, you should have a given stomatal regulation so that CICA and the ESEA give you a given transpiration efficiency. But again, the devil's in the details of how this was translated from the Tanner and Sinclair, and I think that needs to be relooked. Okay, this is a function from Armand Kamanian for wheat, but it shows transpiration efficiency or water use efficiency against daytime vapor pressure deficit. Now, in absence of real humidity data, it's estimated as 0.75 of the difference between saturated vapor pressure at Tmax versus Tmin. There's another form that uses 0.67, and it makes about 8-9% difference in transpiration, according to Armand. So, lower VPD, excuse me, if I get the mouse to work again, transpiration efficiency goes down as VPD goes up. The equation on the top left is for C3, on the right is for C4, and these are from Claudio Stockel. Now I'm going to show this against data with AgMaize for the 1982 maize data set in Gainesville, Florida, water limited and irrigated. And I'll also show this for a 1978 Gainesville data set where we irrigated and also had rain fed, where rain for about 75 days we had approximately 3 centimeters of rainfall, very severe stress. And also the famous, I get it back, 1988 drought in the Midwest. Okay, before I show this, I'm going to show one other example with faba bean where saltwater balance was measured with the ET was estimated from saltwater balance where the rainfall is relatively limited and there was confidence about runoff and percolation. And in this case, there's four different equations that we use in this. And the top red one, Priestley-Taylor with extinction coefficient of 0.85. And the blue one is the old FAO24, which was too much of a water-demanding function, and even ASAE agreed with that. So the blue one's over-predicting here at the top. And here's the Priestley-Taylor. After that, we changed the extinction coefficient for purposes of transpiration. So that's different now. And then the light blue line is the FAO56 with reference with an extinction coefficient of 0.5. It's a little bit below. The one called Steiner Dynamic was an attempt at using crop height and wind speed with a little more dynamic resistance, but haven't explained it further. Now this is what for the maize, ag maize model. SS is the transpiration efficiency approach. It has a very distinct pattern. Okay. The TE approach gives less transpiration early because it's dependent on crop growth rate. Priestley-Taylor strongly depended on leaf area index, so it's higher to start. So there's a different pattern early, and the TE method is going above because Florida's very dry in May during this peak period. So it's over-predicting, and then it comes down later. Here's a water stress treatment. You say everything works pretty well, but that's because it's water-limited. And actually, in this case, the TE method, because of slower early water extraction, delayed the time period of water stress and actually over-predicted the yield compared to observed. So you could get dynamics going both directions depending on when the stress occurs. So the point is we need to be sure how they work, why they work with detail. This is soybean, an irrigated treatment in 1978, and it was a deficit irrigation here just to provide enough water during this whole period, but the transpiration efficiency approach is over-predicting during the mid-life cycle because that's when crop growth rate's high, and then it comes down as the crop senesces. Now, here that TE approach is under-predicting the yield. Well, this is total biomass, and this is pod mass. And it's the red is the predicted SW fact water stress, so it's predicting too much stress. This is the rain-fed treatment here, predicting too much stress too early. And this line showing it's under-predicting the yield again with that 75-day period of water limitation. We had about 1 metric ton yield despite that weather. This is the 1988 drought in Ames, Iowa. And looks like it's predicting quite well. Predicts a little bit more water stress with this TE method. What I'll show you, though, is that's caused because of water limitation. It used up all the water regardless of the ET method, and this is cumulative ET, but the TE value being used was not correct because this is the predicted dry matter under that case. Okay, compared to the Priestley-Taylor function, and this is the grain yield. So if we play with this, now there are two reasons that we can do this. One is that we didn't account for root. So if we allow a certain percentage to root, make some other adjustments, then we can say, argue playing with this transpiration efficiency response. Had to go about 30% higher TE for soybean. And then we come up with about the same curve, and in this case, they actually seem to match over time. And we get back to about the same predicted dry matter in the total crop and in the pod. And the little red line is another, there's another assumption in here that the Tanner Sinclair method is, and that is that foliage is at air temperature. Okay, it really isn't. It's 1 to 2 degrees lower if you're in a humid environment. If you're in an arid environment, it's a lot lower. So that's another problem here. So I dropped the T-max by 3 degrees, and then we get back to that almost function. I'll skip that one. And here's the Ames, Iowa data set with, we can't even do it with this 30% higher effect. And what I would say here is that we took the T-max and T-min, or took the, if we used the real humidity, it might have been a humidity that was lower than the actual T-min for some of those, and all that would do is push it harder. So it asks more questions. So a little bit of other evaluation with other legumes. Peanut is a more productive C3 than soybean, has a crop growth rate that's about 60% higher. This caused a problem here because more growth rate said more transpiration. So it's predicting a greater stress. So it either says species differ in TE or some other issue is going on. If I did a combination with this transpiration efficiency approach of 15% reduction in the crop growth rate, allowed to go to roots, and used a 0.67 in the VPD equation instead of 0.75 on T-max, and subtracted 1.5 degrees Celsius, okay, then it worked about right. So the adjustment in the detail is important. And I pointed out this question about the assumption of canopy temperature being at air temperature. I'm tempted to think that somebody could play with the EDSO function of leaf temperature against VPD to give a regulation on this. I don't know what you think. But and then the other one is a lot of other assumptions. It's based on sunlit LAI. It ignores shaded leaves. It says their respiration is equal to maintenance, therefore we'll ignore them. And they do transpire. So I'm not sure what's going on there. So my conclusion is that the models differ considerably in absolute ET, and the methods make a lot of difference. There are many ways to go wrong, and I won't detail that. So we need to test them against real ET data, because multiple maize models, for example, in wheat, David Camerani would have presented that. I'm not sure what happened with his topic, but the wheat models basically show some of the same characteristic, because about half of the maize models also have versions for wheat, same platforms. So this is the last slide, and this is just basically a little bit of an advertisement that we have organized an AgMIP crop water ET team to test model prediction of ET, water use, water limited production against real data. We'd like to see multi-model evaluation. Also evaluating, and that's the second point down here, testing modules for processes within platforms against individual appropriate data on soil evaporation or transpiration or soil water uptake. And it's this type of data, and I notice Swat probably should have been in this meeting yesterday when we had this, because he just described a whole lot of really great data that would, so maybe we'll have to talk later. But data from eddy flux bone ratio, instantaneous, hourly, and some models can handle this, season-long ET from soil water balance. And don't forget that part of a way of testing that is that the water-limited dry matter growth should match if the soil water balance is matching and your transpiration efficiency is right. So I'll stop there. Okay.
Okay, Dr. Stokel.
Yes.
Yeah. Again, just for clarification, you referred to the method on transpiration efficiency.
Yes.
I would clarify that this is really this observation where you determine biomass through the process of efficiency, and then you divide by the time.
Right. That's what we've done here. It may be UPSIM has done this differently. I haven't talked with them. That's correct. And I am worried about that. In one case, no energy balance, another case there is. There's some attractiveness to this because I feel that when you have a senescing crop, low nitrogen, cool temperature, less photosynthesis, less transpiration, some of this makes sense. But then to ignore the what goes underground is not important. You know, this is what the models do. Then you've missed the early season. I think that's part of the reason that the early season on a TE method is low, because that part is ignored or thrown away. So, yeah, many things.
So, any other questions for Dr. Bhutti? So, just to reiterate that this symposium on crop model and ET was possible just because of Dr. Bhutti's contribution, and we all are looking forward to moving this project of AgMIP and AgMIP crop water ET project. So, like Dr. Bhutti says, it's not an advertisement. Probably we all want the scientific group, to ET group, to come together and work on this issue.
I would say this: it's meant to be open, voluntary modelers with models they want to test, and data collectors with data they would be willing to share. And it's designed for good recognition of those who are providing data. And initially the start will be maize, because maize is the dominant set of data that's available with the group. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr.
Okay.
Thank you.